This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you back to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
This summer, we're talking about getting started homeschooling because a lot of people are looking at the world around them and the changes that are going on and thinking, you know, maybe we should think about homeschooling our kids.
That's right. And we talked about that last episode, just that logical process that kind of led us to decide for homeschooling. And I see ever so much more so the same kind of things, the same sort of concerns about the social environment in the schools, the way subjects are taught, the governmental policies that are espoused in the school system. And we look at our children and we look at ourselves as Christian parents and thinking, surely there's a better way. Surely we can do something differently.
Yeah, there really is, and it's not that hard. We spoke at the HINTS conference in Charlotte this past weekend, and I remember one father said, can you just explain to me how in the world do you teach different children on different grade levels at one time?
And that's a reasonable thing to ask because, you know, most families, interesting thing demographically, most families who are homeschooling have three or more children. Now, I don't know if that is after they've begun homeschooling and decided they just love it so much and they like having their children around so much, or if larger families tend to be attracted to this. But the fact of the matter is, most homeschoolers have to deal with the question, how do I teach multiple grade levels at once?
It's not as hard as it sounds. I think the reason it kind of hurts our heads to think about is that we picture sitting in the classroom and having a classroom where you lecture all day long teaching subjects and it takes you 7 hours to get through it, and now how in the world am I going to teach another child on a different level? But that's not the way it looks like at all. In fact, today was a school day for our family, and we're in the van.
Yeah, we are coming to you right now from somewhere between Livingston, Alabama, and Meridian, Mississippi. I'm not sure precisely where we are, but I know we're on Interstate 20 going westbound. So, you know, it's an interesting thing because, you know, we have homeschooled multiple grades. Tell me, Mrs. Young, how many grade levels have you homeschooled at one time?
The most I've ever done at one time is six, and that's from a senior in high school down to kindergarten.
Right. And that was only six children in the household?
No, we also had a little toddler at the same time, too.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, you know, at one point we had one homeschooling child and three toddlers and preschoolers. And, you know, we go through life. We've homeschooled 21 years. What you've got to do is get your head out of this lecture theory of education.
Well, you know, you hit something there because most of us came up through the traditional bricks and mortar classroom environment, and we have never seen anything except a single grade level in one room. We've never seen a classroom environment where you had maybe four different grade levels widely separated in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, we've all heard about it. The one-room schoolhouse.
Yes, we have.
In fact, many of us have read stories that involve one-room schoolhouses like The Little House on the Prairie book.
And somehow we forget about that, and we don't realize we've already heard about a different model. And so when we look at our kids, you know, I remember that dear woman that you met several years ago who was a former classroom teacher and had decided to leave the classroom and to come home and to homeschool her three children.
Actually, it was four. She walked,
oh, wow.
She walked into a homeschool support group meeting, and she looked absolutely beat up. She was exhausted. And she just said, I don't know how you do it. I've only got four. I had six at the time. I've only got four, and I'm losing my mind. Homeschooling is taking us all day and all night. Now, I'm a pretty sweet support group leader, so I just sat down next to her, and I said, okay, honey, tell me about your day. And she got all excited, and she said, well, see, I'm a teacher. And so I bought these desks from the school system, and I lined them up in a row, and I put a, I had my husband install a chalkboard on the wall of the room we do school in. And after we say the Pledge of Allegiance and get started with our school day, you see, first I teach the first math lesson. And then I teach the second math lesson. And then I teach the third math lesson. And then I teach the fourth math lesson. And then we all sit there till everyone's done with their seat work. And it's taking forever. It's taking like 13 hours a day. How do you do it?
So she was doing this for every subject for four different grade levels, and it was like teaching 4 days worth of school in one 16-hour period.
She was. And I said, well, let me tell you about our day. The first, everybody that comes down, we have pre-breakfast chores, things you're expected to do. And then we have breakfast, and then we gather together and we have devotions. Because you know what? You don't have devotions, everybody's attitude's going to be wrong all day anyway. We need to focus on God for the first few minutes. And then I give a list to our older children. And they know what they're supposed to do. In fact, the teenagers make their own list. They know what they're supposed to do that week. They plan it out. They handle it. The middle children get lists. The youngest children, I sit them right down next to me. And I work with one child while all the others work on their work. And then I work with a different child and while the others work on their work. It's more of a tutorial method.
Okay. And, you know, there's several things going on here. I see the I see an interweaving of the things that need the teacher's attention. I see a recognition that some students are more able than others to go forward and work independently and to do some things without minute-by-minute supervision and direction. And so you make use of those differences.
Right, because, you know, a high schooler doesn't need you to read their literature to them. They need to read their literature and then come discuss it with you.
Right. And a high schooler doesn't need you to arrange blocks on the table to help them with basic addition.
And even the child who needs your one-on-one attention to do manipulatives and teach them their math lesson then can work on their worksheet, their seat work by themselves.
Okay. So I guess that's your first big trick, is recognize that your students are different and those differences allow you to interweave their instructional day so that you can effectively do two or more grade levels in the same day.
Oh, you can do six grade levels in the same day. You can do as many as is necessary because I'm serving as the tutor. I'm the one who, like, when we do a math lesson, a math book might include eight different ways to teach a concept. But if the child's got it on the first one, there's no need to do eight of them.
And if they don't get it on the first one, you can do as many as you need.
And if they don't get on eight, you can do 30 if you need to.
Right.
You know, and it's so much more efficient than teaching in a classroom. Because in a classroom, I just have to explain it a bunch of different ways in the hopes I'm reaching all the children.
Yeah.
But when I teach my child, I can explain it, and then we can discuss it. And I can find out exactly where their glitch is in understanding. And so I can address exactly what issue they're having.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that, all right, now that's really good advice. Now, we mentioned another person in there, though, and I guess let me just point out, too, the fact that we had six grade levels going, it only happened because we had more than six or more children. You know, that a smaller family is not going to end up teaching six grade levels at once, and it would be a very unusual family. Even a very large family would be hard-pressed to have more than six grade levels at one time, just because the way babies come, you know. So you know, this, I guess this is saying we probably had the greatest challenge that you're going to encounter on that, and you live to tell about it, and you did not go bald, your hair is not standing up on the end and totally stark white, but instead you have well-educated adult children who are our friends now, not just our kids, but young people that we're proud to know and like. And you know what? That means that the relationship survives.
And it does. You know, teaching different grade levels is not as hard as it's made out to be. It takes some juggling.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to make some plans. You've got to know where you're going with each day. When I fail to get done what I need to get done is when I fail to plan. You know, when I fail to plan, then if I get distracted, I can't keep on task. But if I have a plan and I know what each child is supposed to be doing, at least by the week, then if we get distracted or something happens, I can go back and see where we're supposed to be.
Now, we do believe in planning, and we know we have friends who plan things down to 15-minute increments or less sometimes. Now, we've never done it quite that detailed, have we?
No. Well, we tried. It didn't last.
Okay.
A schedule that intense makes me feel trapped. And our lives have never, well, and it's been many, 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 many years since our lives were that predictable. And even then, we had babies that might upset the apple cart there. And so, for me, it's more of an order that I do things in.
More of a sequence kind of thing.
Right, where I'm thinking, okay, first I'm going to deal with our little one's phonics, and then we're going to deal with math for this child and math for that child. And, you know, really, I've almost worked myself out of a job because our children are getting older, and we only have two in elementary school now. And it seems so easy to me compared to previous years because the teenagers can get so much of this done on their own. What they need is they need me to make sure they stay on track and to provide the discussion and the problem solving that they need. You know, when they're struggling, they say, okay, let's talk about this. Let's work it through. But a lot of their learning they do on their own because they love to learn.
And really, they need to be doing that. That's something that, you know, I know you could get to a point once sometime with a high schooler and think, oh, I'm not spending the same kind of time that I used to spend with him when he was just an elementary schooler. You know, I'm not spending the hours and hours of one-on-one time with him that I did when he was a first grader. And you know what? You shouldn't be. Because when they move out into the real world, whether that's into higher education or into a job market or whatever they're doing, they need to be able to dig out information on their own. They need to be able to get a broad assignment to say, I want you to research a topic, whether that means, dear student, I want you to go to the library and give me an essay on Hemingway's use of a certain symbol, or if you said, hey, young employee, I need you to go research best alternative on these different pieces of equipment that we're looking at. Either way, you need to be able to seek out information, to know how to phrase the question that you're going to research, to write a report or an essay or whatever else, and to bring that back and present it. And you know what? Most of that, almost all of that, is done by the student. It's not done with the teacher standing by, you know, tapping on their shoulder.
You know, a couple of things I want to mention, Hal, is that your children are going to go back and forth in their ability to be independent.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, a 7 or 8-year-old is not going to be independent. They can't do it. You know, they need your input. But sometimes an 8 or 9-year-old can be more independent than an 11-year-old because, you know, they go through that time period right before puberty where they get kind of distracted and addled. We talk about that in our boot camp 9 to 12. It's a physical thing that affects them mentally.
Yeah, it's not just made up and it's not just a child getting lazy, but actually their brains are actually rewiring themselves, and that means they can't concentrate like they used to, they can't stay on task like they used to, and they can't remember things like they used to even a year or two before. Now, you know what? If you can avoid killing them, they do get through it. It does get better.
They really do get through it, and it gets better. Their brains recongeal, we like to say, but that's not really true. But that's
to say that you're going to need to give your student a lot of supervision when they're first and second graders. Maybe you can lighten it up a little bit when they're third and fourth, but when they're like sixth graders, you probably need to give them more supervision again.
And more help and more patience. And I want to encourage people, too, that one of your main jobs is going to be preserving the love of learning, because it's easy to get focused on the curriculum as our taskmaster.
Uh-huh.
And forget that the curriculum should be a tool to facilitate learning. And that means that if the curriculum is not helping us learn, maybe we need to get a new curriculum, or maybe we need to modify it, or maybe we're doing too many repetitions or not enough repetitions. And so we need to be in charge of the curriculum, not the curriculum in charge of us.
You know, I think that the problem of maintaining the love of learning, to me, seems more a problem of not killing it. Something, you know, to say that young people young people are typically curious enough that if you just prompt them along a little bit and then, you know, don't stifle it in some way, that they can continue to have an interest and a curiosity about the world. But I know a lot of times you see how a subject is presented and you see it just beat to death by a classroom teacher, and you think, there's no wonder some kids give up. I mean, I remember when we lived in Louisiana, when we were first starting homeschooling, we heard that the local school system, actually it was the state school system, had a warehouse down in the state capitol where they would let you come and get used textbooks, I think for free, weren't they?
Oh, they were.
And I remember you picked up one, because I'm a history buff, you picked up a middle school textbook on Louisiana history. And I thought, wow, this is going to be great. You've got the French explorers, and you've got the Cajun migration, and you've got Huey P. Long and the Civil War, and you've got all these cultures here and the Creoles, and you know, I mean, just tremendous, tremendous, tremendous interesting stuff happening in Louisiana. And that book was enough to kill it forever.
It was so boring. It was so incredibly boring. Hey, son, how about driving the other lane where it's a little bit smoother?
Yes, actually, we were having this discussion on the way down. One of our young drivers was asking, are the interstate highways maintained by the state or by the federal government? And I said, well, it's the states maintain them, but with federal money. And he observed the section of I-20 and said, well, I can see that this state spent their money somewhere else. And
yeah.
I think, yeah, I believe they did. Okay, so anyway, so this textbook was enough to absolutely throttle any interest or curiosity you had in your state's history.
Yeah, it reduced some of the most interesting periods of Louisiana history to statistics and facts and bald information. It was really boring.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, let's get back to this managing and teaching different ages.
Sure.
Couple of things. We need to plan what each child needs to do each week.
Okay.
Now,
so,
don't plan
by the week, not minute by minute, but
yeah, and then the week before, you can kind of figure out what you want to do each day. But you don't want to do that any sooner than the week before, because you need to allow for things like doctor's appointments. You don't want to schedule your science experiments on the day you've got three doctor's appointments.
Right.
You know, you want to be able to say, okay, we're going to do a field trip this day. I need a light school day or no school day. Another day, we're going to be home all day. That's a great day to do projects. You want to plan that out pretty close to the time that you're doing it.
Okay. And, you know, again, this taps into something we talked about last time about the incredible flexibility that you have as a homeschooler and not wasting that flexibility. I mean, I have met people who are such slaves to the schedule they've created that they can't break loose to go on a sudden field trip, a great opportunity. Hey, do you know what is coming through town today? This wasn't announced, but I just found out about it. Well, I'm sorry, but we've got to finish these spelling lessons today.
Yeah, and also part of the same thought here is that not to be too disappointed if your kids can't work independently at first. If you're taking your children out of the school system, even if they're older and you would think that they can work independently, most of them really have no idea how.
Oh, can I put a plug in here? If you're taking your kids out of the school system, Melanie has a fantastic workshop she does called Three Simple Goals for Your First Year of Homeschooling. And you can get it on our website at raisingrealmen.com/CD/homeschooling. Yeah, and let me really encourage you, check that out. You can get an MP3 download of it, and it really walks you through this thing, because if you're taking a kid out of the school situation and bring them home to homeschool them, you've got to kind of change channels in their minds. You've got to reestablish some things, establish a different relationship. Hey, mom's the teacher now, right? And, you know, that's going to take a little bit of time and adjustment. And if you know that, you can allow for it, and it doesn't throw you off track right at the start. But the point being, though, that,
you know, Hal, I think there are probably some moms at this point saying, but when will I do my housework?
Okay. Well, and you know what? This is something I wish the dads could hear. You know what? When mom is running a school, she doesn't have time to do a lot of housekeeping during school hours. When those children are all getting on the big yellow bus and the government drives them away to another building, then, yeah, maybe mom's got the time to do the detailed cleaning every day. But when we've made a commitment to educate our children, then we're putting those hours to good use. And that means that we need to kind of adjust our expectations a little.
That's very true, that we need to adjust our expectations, because now there's people home all day, and they're interacting with the house all day. They're doing things all day. Now, part of that's a good thing, okay? Part of that is, yay, you know, we're working on this, and we can all work together to get the work done. And so it's really important to give your kids chores. I was shocked to find out something like only 28% of parents give their kids chores at all. But we need to say, okay, more than that, we need to say, it's okay to adjust our expectations some, because the Word of God tells us that where the manger is, where the ox is, the manger is going to be...
It's going to be dirty.
It's going to be dirty.
He said, when there's no ox, then the manger is clean. And you know, we all like that thought, right? The stable is clean, the barn is clean, the manger is shiny. And you know what? If we found an ox in there, we got to feed it. We got to clean up after it. It's never going to be as clean, but oh my goodness, the blessing that comes from the strength of the ox. And that's so true to say, well, you know what? We've got the whole family's here in the house all day long. How can we ever get it clean when people are just taking it apart and using it and wearing it out? So you know what? You're missing the point here. Your point is not to maintain a museum. Your point is you are discipling your kids. And you've got them at home, and if that means you have to clean up a little differently, maybe a little less frequently, still, wow, what a great opportunity you got.
Because that's really the thing. You know, this is going to reclaim, although it sounds like an awful lot of work, and it is work. It's going to reclaim time that your kids spent away, and now it's going to be time you spend engaging with them. And that means you're there for the teachable moment. You're there when they have questions. You're there when they have spiritual doubts. You're working side by side, and it's just a fantastic opportunity to build a relationship. And as we've talked about before, relationship and truth is how we share the gospel with people.
I'd like to point out something else, too. One of the benefits that we lost when we moved away from one-room schoolhouses and went to single grade-level classrooms, we lose the benefit of the younger students eavesdropping on the older ones. Because, you know, when you look at the little house on the prairie and the little schoolroom that Laura Ingalls was leading and teaching at such a young age, you know, those first graders, those 6 or 7 year olds, got to hear the older ones reciting their lessons, and they didn't understand them, but they heard them. And you know, by the time they got to be 5th or 6th graders, they had heard those lessons 4 or 5 times through. They already kind of knew a lot of it. And, I've seen it with our own kids, that our younger children, when they were introduced to the subjects a few years down the road, had heard it enough that they picked them up very quickly.
Well, now you're answering another one of the questions people ask is, you know, isn't it too distracting to have other people studying in the same room? You got to realize, I'm not standing up in front of a classroom projecting. I'm sitting in my recliner, and I bring a child into my lap or sit them down next to me and talk quietly with them. You know, it's not going to be a huge monster distraction to the other children. If it is, they can pick up their books and go in and out of the room. Now, let's talk about something else that worries people. How do you manage with a baby or a toddler that's not in school?
Well, you've done that. And, you know, the one thing I've observed is that the babies, well, on the one hand, either they sleep a lot anyway, or else they enjoy watching having all the children around.
Oh, they really do. They love watching what the other kids are doing. And there's nothing that involves with taking care of a baby that can't be done, right? There's your teaching other children.
Right.
You know, you can feed the baby, you can nurse the baby, you can change the baby's diaper, dandle it on your knee, whatever you need to do, right there in the midst of your home school. It's not like I have to sit at a teacher's desk. I sit in a recliner with my school books next to me and my children on the other side. It's not that hard.
Yeah. And so babies are actually can be an easier thing to manage than the toddlers. Now, I remember the older toddlers, especially the little girls, just anxious, wanted to do school. How do you handle that?
Well, I get them some things they can only use during school time. you know, some crayons or colored pencils, some little workbooks, preschool workbooks or coloring books or just drawing paper is really best. And get them some things that they can play with during school time. And when they come and say, Mommy, Mommy, I want to do school, then pull them up in your lap, look at them face to face. Because, you know, what I tell people is first attention is the shortest and easiest. That if you keep putting off your toddler or preschooler, just a minute, honey, wait till I'm done, wait, just a minute, wait till I'm done. You know, they have a very short attention span for anything but whining. They can whine all day long.
And so if you respond to that little one in just a minute or two, just give them your full attention, make eye contact, look them square in the face, and let them know, hey, I hear you, I love you, I value you, here's a little bit of something that we can do together, and you count your toes, or you
sing the ABC song,
or you identify a few colors or something.
Teach them a Bible verse.
And what, you spend 2 minutes, 3 minutes with them?
And then they're off to do something else. Unless you've been putting them off. Because I found the longer you put them off, the longer the time they need your attention.
Okay.
And so if you spend, the younger child should get attention first. So what if you're working through, you're explaining a math lesson to an older child? You can say, work on this problem. Or even turn your, if they're readers, turn your teacher's manual toward them and say, keep going right here. I'll be with you in a minute.
Uh-huh.
And they can read the directions in the teacher's manual as easily as I can.
And they
keep going, work the example, and I'll be back with them in a couple of minutes.
And, you know, that gives you a whole different perspective on this whole academic thing when it's such a family activity. You know, we've all got our own subjects. We're all working on different things, maybe. But we're all in here together, and it's not a matter of I'm going to pack up my stuff and go off to my little private world out here that nobody in the family shares except just me. But rather, you know, yeah, we're all here together, and I know I can ask my older brother to explain something because he did this 2 years ago.
It's just a lot more casual, a lot more organic, you know, and really it's a lot more fun.
I think so. So it's not something to be afraid of, does it? If you are looking at the possibility of homeschooling multiple ages at once, and the likelihood is if you've got more than one child that you will consider that, the answer is, yeah, you can do it. There's a few tricks that you need to learn, and you adjust your ideas of what school looks like. But honestly, all the serious learning that you need to can go forward in that kind of environment, and you can manage that even without being a trained professional teacher.
You know, Hal, one thing I forgot to mention. Can I just mention one more thing?
Go right ahead.
In the elementary years, you want to combine a lot of subjects anyway. You want to do history together.
Yeah.
You want to do science together. And so you don't even need to do those separately. I gathered all the children around earlier today. We're in the van. And I climbed in the back, and I said, okay, let's read about Rome. And we read the story of Regulus, one of the military generals of ancient Rome in the First Punic War.
Punic War, yeah.
And I read the story, and everyone listened, and, you know, you can combine things, you can work together, they can work separately, it's doable. It just doesn't look like school did for us. It looks a lot more casual and fun.
And it is. It really is.
And yet they learn a lot more.
And that, you know what, and it comes back to that thing, maintaining the love of learning. You know, when you're sitting around and you're dressed comfortably and you're sitting in a comfortable room and you can ask questions whenever you want to, and, you know, you're not being regimented, you're not worried about peer pressure, and you're not worried about what the girl in the next row thinks or what the boy might do to you at recess or something, but rather you're just focused on unfolding the wonders of God's world. I mean, what a different experience that would have made our own school years.
Oh, I'm serious. It's been a blast, and we've homeschooled for over 20 years. Yeah, this is something you can do. If you want more information about homeschooling all different ages, more detail about the things we talked about, we have an hour-long CD called Homeschooling a House Full, and you can find that at raisingrealmen.com/CDs/homeschooling. And if you want more information on teaching those preteen brains,
yes,
Bootcamp 9 to 12 is our five-week live webinar series. You can watch it. You can watch it, the recordings too, about preteens. And we also have a workshop called Parenting Preteens, and that would be at raisingrealmen.com/cd/family life.
Yes, and upcoming, we are on our way to Dallas for the Teaching Diligently Conference. That's going to be this Thursday through Saturday, July, what is it? 16, 17, 18.
I have no idea. It's this weekend.
Yeah, 16, 17, 18. I was about to say 10th, 11th, and I realized, no, that's last weekend. So it's 16, 17, 18 in Dallas at the Sheraton downtown.
And then we'll be in Robertsdale, Alabama.
Robertsdale at Robertsdale First Baptist Church on Monday evening.
July 20th.
July the 20th. And if you're anywhere in the area, you will join us. But at any rate, we do appreciate you spending the time with us. Until the next time, this is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we hope we'll hear from you sometime soon.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.